Hi, this is Eric Lures, and you're listening to the Guru Selling System radio show. My sales cycle is getting longer and longer and longer, and I'm getting poor, and I'm losing patience, and my boss is losing patience, and I'm losing money, and I don't know what to do. And I'm sure you've heard some variation of this complaint. Either you've been making it, and/or folks around you have been making it. And it's not uncommon in today's day and age, especially over the past couple of years since the financial meltdown. Sales cycles have been getting longer. Yes, people keep saying, "Well, the economy's starting to show signs of life," and to a certain extent, it is. You know, how much of that is real and how much of that is leveraged capital? That's a completely different story, and certainly out of the realm of this show and what I would be able to talk on. But in terms of shortening sales cycles, I mean, there are ways, there are methodologies, I believe, that can shorten sales cycles. And to that end, I invited Kevin Graham to do an interview with me. Now, Kevin is a managing director of Empowered Sales Training, and we're going to get to his interview in just a second. And he gave some really good insights, and I suggest that you stick around for the entire interview all the way through to the end, because, again, he gives some really good insights. And if you're suffering with long sales cycles, then you'll definitely want to check this out. So without further ado, let's get into our interview with Kevin Graham. And today our guest is Kevin Graham. Now, Kevin is a writer, speaker, and expert on sales leadership. As a salesperson, he qualified for President's Club status in three Fortune 500 companies in the ultra-competitive technology sector. He led teams of more than 100 associates and successfully achieved revenue objectives in excess of $1 billion, with a B, dollars per annum. A natural-born salesman, Kevin has been winning sales contests since he was 8 years old. At the age of 15, he won a Scripps Howard Regional Sales Contest, and later he funded college with various sales jobs, including high-volume cold calling and door-to-door consumer sales. Kevin's career has taken him across the United States and to most parts of the world, including Europe, South America, Asia, and Africa. Now, some of Kevin's clients include HP, Kofax, US Robotics, 3Com, and Ingram Micro, and also Mericell. Kevin serves as the managing director of Empowered Sales Training, which offers custom programs to empower sales success. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Eric. It's a pleasure to join your audience.
Well, and I appreciate having you, and I'm sure we all appreciate having you here. Now, today we're going to be talking, you know, about you know, the long sales cycle, you know, getting, you know, what keeps it all going and all this kind of stuff, you know, how can we accelerate these closes and stuff? But let's start from the beginning. From your opinion, why do salespeople have trouble simply going in and closing a sale quickly?
Well, great place to start. I believe the biggest challenge with closing is related to the most important step in the sales process, in my opinion, and that is qualifying.
Okay. What are we doing wrong in terms of qualifying that you see?
Well, many people are not giving proper due to significant steps along the way, and to use a poor analogy, if you will, they get down to the 5-yard line, and there's lots of heavy lifting still to be done, so that's not where you want to be. You want a deal to close naturally, and to close without confrontation and without conflict. And the way you do that is through qualifying all the requirements that you'll need in order to process the deal, but also based on your model and your company's selling cycle, all the requirements that the typical customer needs to go through as well. You know, if you get to the end of a deal and all of a sudden you're asking about legal or asking about other cute quality assurance steps or, you know, end-user testing, end-user acceptance, things of that sort, you're at the wrong point. You should be pushing those activities upstream so that things are happening at the same time and the deal's moving along faster and it's closing with more ease.
Okay, so qualifying upfront would handle or further upfront, let me rephrase that. So if we're not qualifying, we're not handling all the sort of minutia up front. Do you ever get, you know, because I'm thinking about pushing all that up front. How do you push that up front gracefully, I guess, you know, to do all that sort of qualifying up front without feeling like you're taxing the client or their time too much?
Well, there's a lot going on in that question. I'll say first that the best way to overcome objections is to prevent them. So you know the likely questions that your process answers and addresses and raises, so address them proactively. And then also around the old adage of ABC, always be closing, most people misinterpret what that mantra is all about. It's not about lambasting the prospect with an endless barrage of closing questions. Rather, it's about maintaining momentum toward the close. And if you're, you know, depending on your selling model, if you're pursuing driving consensus of the management team or access to legal for contracts review early on and other things, that's a means of always be closing, because if you're seeing resistance to those activities, you'll know that there's still some tough selling to be done, or that the prospect is not fully galvanized to the review of the project.
So the objections are what are slowing down the sales process.
Well, sometimes we cause our own objections by not preventing them up front. And I know that can sound somewhat counterintuitive, but objections are very natural. It's just as if I were to call you up right now and ask for a meeting. You know, the first thing anyone's going to do when you ask for their time or money is to blurt out a quick reason why that's not a good idea. And that's not, those aren't heavy objections, but they're natural. So you need to expect them, and wherever you can, prevent them instead of waiting for them to arise and having conflict and overcoming them.
Well, and I agree with you. And I know, though, that one of the issues, though, is that sometimes when people try to front load and answer all the objections up front, it can seem like a verbal barrage, you know what I'm saying? So that, you know, even though it may be answering all the objections, I think the barrage itself can sometimes create an objection. So, you know, is there a, from your experience, I mean, is there a series or a set number of objections that should be handled, or, you know, that you could say, you know, this goes across industries, or is it by industry, or is it by company, or is it by person? You know, how do you approach that?
Well, just as the five W's and the H, you know, who, what, where, when, why, and how, and all that are there, there's common objections, you know, price, delivery, fit, is it aligned to our needs, does it take a priority over other projects, political or financial or otherwise. There's common things that apply to all models, but most of this stuff is specific to your individual selling cycles and sales model. And really, if you look back at the customers who have purchased your product or service in the past and understand the different objections that they've had or the areas where you've had to ensure a fit, list those out. Identify ways that you can proactively circumvent those by demonstrating a fit so that it doesn't become an issue.
Okay, so your industry and/or your style specific. So, but we have two factors going on. We have obviously the salesperson, and then we have the prospect on the other side. So, when we are in the sales process, do you ever see an issue with the mind of the salesperson creating an issue, or should we be focusing more on the mind of the, I might be asking sort of a higher level question, but should we be focusing more on our own mindset, or should we be focusing more on the mindset of the prospect? And if our own mind is kind of going blah blah blah, because I know that can create a lot of objections, you know, our own mindset. Which one should we be focusing on, you know, for a more effective sales system?
Well, you raise some interesting dynamics, and many times as sales professionals, we create our own messes by prioritizing the wrong things or approaching it from the wrong orientation. I believe firmly in the power of customer intimacy, and I say that if you bear hug the customer, they'll not only tell you what the winning hand needs to be, they'll tell you when to play which cards. And in just about any pipeline I've ever reviewed, you know, thousands and thousands over the years, and talked about individual sales scenarios, any loss is almost always related back to a challenge with customer intimacy. And so you can't always have the time and leisure to go as deep in an account as you want to in order to move a sale along. But the more information you know, the more perspective you have from that customer's or point of view, the better off you're going to be. So it's always about qualifying. It's always about understanding the customer and making the product and service fit for them.
So definitely we want to focus in on the customer. When we are and their mindset. When we're in that process, and I have this, this debate going back and forth with a number of people, what is more important? Do you think mindset is more important or mechanics are more important in terms of the sales process moving forward?
Oh, mechanics are critical, but if your mindset's wrong, it doesn't matter how good your mechanics and your tool belt is. If your orientation isn't a win-win, if your vision isn't of having success and being due that success and earning that success, then it doesn't matter how good your mechanics are, you're going to fail. You need to have a positive outlook, you need to have a vision of success, and you need to work to ensure that your vision of a solution for that customer, and again, it varies based on the business model and selling cycles, but your vision of a final win needs to align to the prospect's vision of a solution. And the more you can get out the prospect's vision of a solution, as well as their underlying need and the implications of their problem, the more you're going to have an opportunity to see where you're a fit and to align to it or to help guide their expectations.
Hmm. Okay, so then, again, our mindset kind of comes back in and becomes a dynamic piece of this whole thing. So would the, we already covered that objections. Would you say then that that the mindset then, I mean, you worked with a number of sales teams. So would you say that one of the biggest problems then is also a mindset issue on the part of the salesperson that sort of puts a glue in the machinery?
I would submit that's the number one item for any sales professional is where you're orienting from. What is your intention? What is your resource? What is your vision? What's your motivation? I mean, that's your center. That's absolutely core to everything you'll execute on. And regardless of your tool belt or your experience or your acumen, your business acumen, your selling skills, you need to orient from a proper first foremost.
So, I find this stuff fascinating. I'm always, I come from a background of NLP and studying cognitive behavioral systems. So I'm always going for the internal thing that's going on. So for those listening out there who are like, I just want to hear some mechanics, I think what Kevin is alluding to is obviously that, your brain first before, your mechanics, your mindset first before your mechanics. So now, if we getting kind of back onto track here, if sales go too long, because a lot of people might brush it off and say, well, in lieu of closing or creating more closed deals in sales, I'm just going to go out and I'm just going to try and get more and more and more and more leads in my pipeline. What happens though if we allow our sales to, the sales cycle lengths to go too long? What are the detrimental outcomes from that?
Well, it's about momentum, and if you're taking the eye off the ball on a legitimate, bona fide opportunity, and in order to fill your pipeline, I would say, well, congratulations, you're focused on filling your pipeline. That's usually the biggest mistake of most sales reps, that they don't do enough of that. But I would also counter you to execute the basics, and that's professional, consistent, value-added follow-up. It's leading the project. It's leading the prospect. It's engaging with multiple decision-makers, not just the sole person you initiated the relationship with, and lots of other things. And, if you've got stuff that, let's put it this way, most sales professionals suffer from challenges related to opportunities that never seem to close, or prospects that just don't seem to take that final step. But if for some reason you're one that just takes your eye off the ball once you get things moving, you need to work with your sales management or an outside consultant to understand what that's all about, because you need to have a hunger for completion, not just a hunger for activities.
Interesting. Can you, you said if you're one of those people who takes your eye off the ball, what drives that? What drives people to... from your experience, what are some of the reasons people would take their eye off the ball, as it were?
Well, I don't want to overgeneralize, but I think fundamentally we're all fairly predictable as sales professionals. And as human beings, we don't like rejection. So for, you know, it, like I said, it's kind of rare for someone to default back to prospecting, because the old joke about salespeople and prospecting, there's two kinds, those that hate it and those that lie and say they don't. So, you know, typically salespeople are guilty of prioritizing anything over prospecting. But that being said, your instance, the one you describe, I've seen where salespeople, some have a reluctance to be intimate and a reluctance to get deep and a reluctance for the what they feel is the confrontation leading toward a close. And I would submit most of that's related to a poor orientation around the need for qualifying, and that think that a close shouldn't be dramatic. It shouldn't be some big crescendo we're building toward. It should be something that naturally flows. And so I think I have seen salespeople who are very good at feeding the funnel and very poor at moving through the latter stages of closing deals. While I think it's rare, I think some of those challenges are related to their perspective around qualifying and closing. Some of those people felt like it was something that they were building up for the grand finale and the great end, and that's not the way a close should be approached.
So by building up to this crescendo, as you called it, I mean, are they sort of overwhelming themselves, and maybe that's why they're hanging back?
That's it. I mean, it's just like the football analogy. You're down on the 5-yard line. It's time to just punch it in and to dot the final I's and cross the final T's. It's not the time for heavy lifting to figure out, okay, who's going to do legal review, and okay, what about your organization, and what about the systems, and what about the other sites and your infrastructure, and how are we going to deploy this? You know, all those things are part of qualifying, part of working together with a prospect that's galvanized to the review of the solution. And again, it could be a product or a service, but at the end of the day, customers aren't buying products or services. They're buying solutions to problems. If you don't mind me commenting, Zig Ziglar had a classic one years ago where he said something along the lines that Home Depot sold 1 million quarter-inch drill bits last year. But do you know that none of those customers wanted quarter-inch drill bits? He delivers it much better, and there's room for more drama there. But basically, they all want quarter-inch holes. They don't want quarter-inch drill bits. They want quarter-inch holes. And so it comes back to knowing what your customers' true needs are, what their motivations are, personally and professionally, and aligning to it and driving with that as your force.
Now, you were talking about intimacy and a fear of intimacy, but you know, which kind of sounds more like, you know, a relationship between a significant others. But can you go a little deeper with that? I mean, when you go out there and you're talking with sales teams and stuff, and you start talking about intimacy, what are you after, and what kind of response or anything do you get from folks when you start throwing that word around, intimacy?
Well, it can relate to a lot of different areas. When I talk about customer intimacy, that's a big umbrella that covers just about everything related to selling, in my opinion, and starting with mirroring the customer. You know, people like to buy from people they like. So I'm not saying it's all about service and entertainment, but if you're not aligning yourself to the customer, what does he mean mirroring the customer? Well, if they answer the phone in a very sharp and curt manner, you need to address them in a bottom line, crisp manner. If they answer the phone in a drawl that, basically describing their day and what they're wearing and other, non-essential items in that conversation right off the bat, then you don't want to address them in a curt, crisp manner. You need to let the conversation have some breadth and length. And that's just in a conversation. It's so much about, mirroring the customer from an education level, from a dress level, from a just the pace you approach them level. There's so much of that on the front end. But ultimately, when I talk about customer intimacy, I'm talking about, think about the deals that close naturally and that you had success with in the past. Typically, that's because you knew just about everything there was to know about that customer. Now, Lord forbid it's because you worked on them a year and a half instead of 6 weeks, but the truly skilled sales professionals know how to get intimate and pull out the important data points, important information, and important people access that they need to move deals along at a faster clip. And, again, it comes back to knowing as much as you can about that customer intimacy.
Okay, so really getting to know, really getting to know you, just like you would with any person you were trying to make friends with. So, in a way, are you saying that what we need partly compassion and partly friendship building here?
Well, that's just on the front end, and that's has very little to do with it. Although, if your orientation's wrong, it will bite you everywhere in the process. But it's really about just qualifying and coming back to knowing. You know, you talk about why some people don't like to go deeper. Well, details are messy. Intimacy is messy. You get into the sophistication and complications and all the different quagmire of, you know, how the sausage is made or how that company makes decisions or, oh, by the way, we looked at this 2 years ago or, oh, by the way, that other department, we butt heads with them all the time. You know, those are just dynamics of people and dynamics of organizations. And if you're not, depending on your solution, you may be selling something that you can sell to one individual manager within a company or in a B2C consumer market to where you don't have to deal with the complexity of a decision-making unit or a management team. But if indeed you're selling in a B2B environment where you've got to go in and understand an organization and align to their strategic objectives and get it budgeted or get, you know, end-user acceptance, or to get all the different things that cause, you know, I used to sell business process automation solutions to large enterprise organizations. And those not only would be million-dollar deals many times, but they would affect an organization in a global manner. It would change how they process some of their business, some of their workflow internally, and that typically affects the bulk of the organization. So you've got to drive consensus of a management team. And while not all those individuals have to say yes, just about any of them can say no. So you need to cover your bases. And there's lots of aspects to it. So it's really about digging deep and getting intimate with that organization.
So would you say that there's a sort of fear response sometimes that can gunk up the works, fear from the buyer side?
Well, I think that there's a natural reluctance for any prospective buyer, customer, prospective customer, to not give access to the full organization because we don't want you wasting our time. If you're a sales rep, we don't want you wasting our time. Once we have confidence in your solution, once we have confidence as a buyer in your professionalism as a salesperson and your capability and we're aligned about where we're trying to get to, you know, buyers are more apt to introduce you to the various folks across the organization. But, you know, I don't need a buyer's blessing to introduce myself to various folks across the organization because I know what works in my selling model, and if I need those other people's input, I'm not going to wait for that buyer to introduce me. I'm going to go out and get it because I think it's deserved and I think it's important, and I can help a buyer understand that whether they like it or not, because we're not going to get very far if I'm playing, you know, second fiddle to who that individual buyer thinks I need to be talking to and when I need to be talking to them, especially in a large sale environment, a large solution selling scenario.
Well, okay, and I think you're right there. You were starting to allude to it a little bit, but, you know, I guess let's dive into that question. So from your perspective, what are the steps that, you know, if you were going to break it down into the mechanics piece, what are the steps that a salesperson needs to go through to accelerate a sale?
Well, good stuff. And again, it always comes back to qualifying. But, you know, I have a critical 10 ways to accelerate a deal to close, and maybe we could just talk to that a little bit. One of them, I put number 10 at the bottom of the list, is aggressive sales management. I know that's not ideal by any means, and that's why it kind of ranks at the bottom of the list. But many a sales manager will proclaim that deals would have never have closed if it weren't for micromanagement. And kind of on a more upbeat note, sales contests and other sales rep incentives fall under that category too. So I think, you know, one of the top 10 ways to accelerate a deal to close is for sales management to get creative and to micromanage a little bit and to drive forward. As ugly as that sounds.
Okay. What other tactics have you got there?
Well, number 9, customer incentives. So this too is a bit of a last resort because I feel that compressing the sales cycle by way of a fire sale, if you will, typically only results in reduced profitability, not to mention all the sales rep frustration and customer anguish that goes with customer incentives. When you're trying to crush a deal, and we've all been there at the end of the month, end of the quarter, and the boss needs a deal, and we want the deal, we want to get paid in the deal, so we do all sorts of unnatural things, again, all that heavy lifting inside the 5-yard line, it's not healthy, but sometimes the magic is pulled off and sometimes the incentives on the customer side work. Number eight I have is gain a bona fide customer commitment to the timeline. Now, granted, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and commitments are not always fulfilled, but galvanizing the key decision maker to a timeline really does work wonders. Now, number seven, drive consensus of the management team. Agreement does not always equate to action, but having every stakeholder nodding yes is a good element if your solution involves the broader unit. So, you know, like I said, they don't all have to say yes, but any one of them can say no. So getting everyone on the same page, while it can be time-consuming and costly, it also leads to agreement and action. Number six, persistent follow-up. And all the basics, right? So professional value-based follow-up is magical because out of sight is out of mind. So if you stay religious with your real opportunities, you'll likely reap the rewards of that focused activity. And number five, align the solution to a strategic objective. Whether it's at the departmental or corporate level, if your solution helps the company achieve their stated goals, chances are it's closer to being in the fast lane. And even better, if you can align it to an objective that's part of the decision maker's compensation or bonus program, you're even better off. And oh, by the way, that's customer intimacy again. You know, very few of us have the courage or discipline to sit there across from a buyer and say, how are you paid? But at the end of the day, if you know work that buyer long enough and understand that decision maker well enough and have a relationship, you'll be able to ultimately say to them, tell me how you're compensated, because I got a feeling that you've got some things in your compensation plan that are either qualitative or quantitative related to what you're trying to accomplish here. And the more I understand that, the more I can align to that. And oh, by the way, I want you rewarded for your efforts with us. So aligning to a strategic objective. Number four, expose a personal win or gain for the decision maker. It's important to understand the difference between a professional objective, like some of the ones we just talked about, or a personal objective, which could include their personal compensation plan, or their personal ambitions or desires of that individual. And if you get close to that, it's a powerful method to get the customer to take action. Even more powerful than understanding their professional objective. Number three, tie your solution to a market opportunity of the customer, and that means one of their customer's requirements, or it will enable your customer to provide an increased service level that will yield your customer incremental revenue from their marketplace, or on the reverse end of that, keep them from losing a customer. So if you can tie your solution to their revenue, that's pretty exciting. Number two, on the top 10 ways to accelerate a deal to close, is demonstrate a strong return on investment, an ROI supported by customer data. If the decision maker recognizes that the department or company is losing money by not implementing your solution, it begins to become a no-brainer to get moving sooner rather than later. And this last one, before I state it, I just want to apologize that it may not apply to everyone, because the number one way to accelerate your deal to close is to tie your solution to a pending regulation or other impending event. It may not affect most solutions, but nothing is more motivating for a company than an impending event such as a new regulatory requirement that forces the company to act by a specific date. Anytime I've been selling in those scenarios, there's an outside force that's causing that company to act. All these other things kind of go away to some degree because in one way or another, they've got to get a solution in place. And that is from my list of top 10 ways to accelerate a deal to close. I hope it was helpful and valuable.
No. And I hope everybody was taking notes. And I like the pending regulation scenario. So finding a trigger event that is going to force them to make a decision is always effective. And puts them in. But again, and as you were pointing out earlier, your intention is not just to go in there and say, well, not, I know I got their back against the wall, but to go in there and still having compassion and caring and wanting to, do the best for them and not just, manipulate them at that point in time, which I know you would never suggest to anybody. So we've got these 10 steps and everything like that. So if we were going to boil, you know, boil it down, and you were going to say, you know, there's, I don't know, two or three takeaways that you wanted everybody to, you know, like two or three nuggets that you said, these are the two or three things that I think everybody who's listening to this show right now should take away from this so that they can start. Obviously, you know, your ten lessons there are great. And if they were going to also, you know, boil it down to two or three starter things, what would those two or three starter things be?
Well, I would suggest to any sales professional to take a look at their current customers and deals they've had successfully closed. And make a note of all the significant points in the process, because selling is a process. And, you know, if that customer, in order to do that deal, had to cross that river and they had to jump on specific lily ponds of, you know, getting it through legal and all the other things. I mean, legal is just one aspect of it, but gaining consensus as a management team or getting people on board or making sure it's budgeted. I mean, there's so many different things that are relevant to the sales process. But if you make a notation of which ones are specific to your selling cycle and business model, and then proactively chart out how you're going to engage customers, how you can efficiently extract that information and efficiently establish the relationship at a deep enough level so that you can move it forward more quickly, I think that gives you the vision of what you're in for going into a new sales process and allows you to move some things upstream so that you're not having to get down to the, you know, inside the 5-yard line and do heavy lifting. I know I'm mixing metaphors, so forgive me, but hopefully it makes sense.
Okay, yeah, and trust me, I understood your metaphors, and I'm not picturing you know, linebackers wearing waders and going into fishing, doing fly casting or anything else like that. So, Kevin, how can our listeners, you know, get in touch with you, learn more about you, and what you do?
Well, thank you for asking, Eric, and I'm excited just to be engaged with the Guru Selling audience. My firm is Empowered Sales Training. It's past tense Empower, Empowered Sales Training. We've got several free guides on our website, empoweredsalestraining.com, including book more meetings, get the decision maker on the phone. They can take the Empowered Sales Quiz to gauge their sales acumen. And the Empowered Sales YouTube channel, just under Empowered Sales, has dozens of free sales videos that lots of people seem to find helpful. And we'd love your audience to take a moment to check them out and to see if there's information that could be of value to them.
All right. Well, Kevin, on behalf of the audience, you know, thanks for being on. I know you have, you know, you've given us your top 10 list. You've given us a lot of insights into what elongates these sales processes and how we can shorten them up. And certainly in today's marketplace, that is a key component. So thanks again for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you, Eric. It's been my pleasure.
And thank you for taking the time to listen today. Now, if you are suffering from longer and longer sales cycles, then you definitely want to check out the book Be Do Sell. That's the book about the Guru Selling System, and we have two or three chapters in there that cover the entire spectrum of long sales cycles and how to shorten them, a lot of tactics and techniques that you use immediately to help you shorten your sales cycles with your clients. And if you want to check that out, you can go on over to bedosale.com. That's BEDOSALE.com, and you can even go there and just pick up the first three chapters of the book absolutely free without any obligation. And if you also have any questions for us here in the United States or Canada, you can give us a call. Our number is 973-551-9220. And if you're outside the USA or Canada, send us an email at info@guruselling.com. That's info@guruselling.com, and send us your name, email address, Skype ID, and what country you're in, and we'll get back to you ASAP about setting up a time to chat. Anyways, this is Eric Lewis saying thanks again for taking the time to listen, and always remember, you got to be a person before you can be a salesperson. Take care. Bye-bye.